And unless there's some intervention there and some readjustment and apologies and making things right, it goes from passion to neglect to the very dangerous stage, boredom. And by boredom, what we mean is that there's the accumulation of unresolved conflicts. They're little stuff, just little stuff. Little scud missiles, and some of them have landed. And you got all this stuff building up inside of you. And all of a sudden, imperceptibly, what has taken place is that you're not objective about the issues anymore. That person becomes the issues. And you start avoiding each other. You start staying out later. Or you play a few more holes of golf. Or you figure out ways of being away. And you get all kinds of excuses. And you don't like each other now. And at this juncture, unless there's major intervention, you reach the final phase. You've gone from passion, neglect, boredom, and now departure. And that departure takes, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It takes two forms. There are many people who are, the fire's gone. There's a huge spike, by the way, in the divorce, a number of divorces around between ages 45 and 60. And one of the reasons why there's such a huge spike there is that the kids and other things have kind of deflected the issues. And now when the kids go off to college or they get married and that piece is pulled out, all of a sudden you're stuck with the reality that this relationship has been dead for 10, 15 years. And we've just negotiated it. Unless there's a major move of God or intervention, somebody honest, deep-seated repentance, it's over. This pattern, this pattern is also true of our relationship with God. Hear me. And I'm not going to talk so much about marriage tonight as I am going to talk about the core issue in all of life. And that's keeping the fire burning in your heart for Jesus. It is a core thing. And the shape and condition of your marriage is reflective of the shape and condition of your walk with God. It's not that deep. Everything in life tells the truth about our walk and relationship with God. Jesus had this in mind when he asked John to pen some words in Revelation chapter 2. John is in exile on the Isle of Patmos. And Jesus, in so many words, says, pick up your pen. I've got some letters that I want you to write to some churches. He dictates seven of these letters. It's a letter to the church at Ephesus, though, that I think from a cultural perspective, in terms of where we are right now in this culture, in this world, in the state of Christianity today, that's most profound and most relevant to us. Many of you know this text. I just want to walk through it, and I want to say a few words about recapturing our first love. Revelation chapter 2. Now, by the way, I have to tell you that six of the seven letters that Jesus dictates to John follow the same template. The exception is a letter to the church at Philadelphia. But if you're studying these seven letters, with the exception to the church, letters to the church at Philadelphia, it follows this pattern. There's commendation. He commends them for something. Secondly, there's condemnation. He condemns them for something. And thirdly, there is correction. And so there's this template right here that he walks through. Now listen to these words. He says in Revelation chapter 2, verse 1, to the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. This is what he says. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who have called themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you have not grown weary. Now, I hang in there for a second. I want to underscore a few things here. I want you to notice that he commends them for two things. He commends them for two things. Number one, he commends them for right behavior. I mean, Jesus, the Lord of history, you gotta feel the emotional context here. Jesus says this. And this letter is going out to these churches. And the church at Ephesus, they met probably in different house churches. And that's the reason why it's called a circular letter. The letter circulated to them. And the elders reading that letter. And you got to feel this thing here. Jesus, the Lord of history, is giving you a standing ovation. He's commending them for right behavior. The verbs there, you've got endurance, you are bearing up, you've not grown weary. You're squeaky clean. Wonderful. Secondly, he commends them for right beliefs. There's a little line, the New American Standard Version, I believe, puts it this way. You have put to test those who call themselves apostles and are not. Often we trip over that line. The inference is this. You have a right theological, biblical framework. Your biblical worldview is tight. Your doctrinal beliefs are square. They're everything. Wonderful. You might be scratching your head. You go, well, what else is there? Jesus says you are behaving right and you're believing right. Now, when I first read this text many, many years ago, I paused and thought, well, what's the problem? I mean, when you go to a city and you want to pick a church, I mean, you check out how the people live, right? And you see if there's a, you know, the gap ain't too broad. And you check out what they believe, right? You're behaving right. And you're believing right. But the next line, Jesus slides into condemnation. Now you're sitting there in a house church, maybe 18, 15 people. The elder reads these words, and then this next line grabs you by the lapels. But the Lord of history says, but I have this against you. Jesus said, I got a problem with you. I got a problem with you. Now, he's not saying don't behave right or don't believe right, obviously, because he commends them for that. I have a problem, but I got a problem with you. I got a problem with you. And look, I'm a little bit too old to do recreational speaking, so listen to me.